Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
More to be concerned about. It seems like we're revising our mission after we received the grants to fit a narrative that I guess doesn't comply with those grants, causing them to be canceled. I mean, is this just the tip of the iceberg? Are we going to, if we have to, when we look under the hood some more, are we going to find more issues? And I mean, it's causing me some heartburn here.
Yeah, so the UWF Board of Trustees meeting catastrophe. Depending on whose side you're on. If you're on the side of, you know, the administration, Martha Saunders, UWF, all the success that we've had over so many years recently from Judy Bents to the current administration, then it was a bad catastrophe. A bad catastrophe? I don't know. Anyway, if you're on the side of chaos and disruption and, Governor DeSantis, then raging success, because it was basically an ambush of Martha Saunders. And when I say basically, I mean it was absolutely an ambush of Martha Saunders. You had the, I don't know that they were given instructions, except that that's the only way to explain all of the data that we watched. But you saw the people that Governor DeSantis had put on this board, some of whom had been confirmed, like Chris Young, some of whom have been rejected, like Adam Kissel, who nevertheless is still on the board for 45 days, and some of whom, like Zach Smith, who apparently now sits on both PSC and UWF, somebody who is local, and they made that loud and clear, and yet he's really, to me, the most troubling of all the people that is now on the UWF board. More on that maybe later. So what Chris Young is asking about is the NSF grant, the noise grant that you've kind of heard about in the news. And this is the one that had the social justice in the title and, you know, in the cover sheet kind of thing. And basically the answer from UWF was, well, it wasn't really working that way in substance. It just, we changed the program, or the program didn't have social justice elements in it anymore. But the name still did. And Chris Young says, okay, are we expecting more grants to show up where we have these problems? Because as you're conducting this internal review of all of the, basically the grants and the programs and everything at UWF and the vision, mission statements and all that law strategic plan, to make sure that everything is in line with the law passed by the Tallahassee legislature and signed by the governor to require that you don't do DEI stuff, well, what other things do we expect to find? And Martha Saunders says, could there be more?
Well, we may. And that's why we're reviewing, but we're also working with the granting agency to make sure we're in compliance. You can see from the magnitude of the data we're providing, there's a lot even for us to be reviewing. But we continue to review.
And that's, I think, a fair answer, which is, you know, yeah, until we do the review, we don't know for sure what we might find. But we think that we're mostly in compliance. The provost was there, and that's basically what he said, Jeremy Kuhl, is that we're probably okay and we're not too worried about it. Meanwhile, there had been some question, you know, Chris Young had been kind of saying, well, do we have to owe money back? I mean, if they cancel their grants or we wind up having to change our parameters and therefore we put ourselves outside of what they are expecting, because if DEI is in the original grant language and then we go no DEI, do we lose the grant and we have to pay it back? And Lonzi Scott, one of the former UWF board members, you know, one of the holdovers, I don't know what you want. I feel like we need to have names for the categories, right? The originals and the replacements, the real ones and the carpetbaggers. I mean, I don't know what, you know, the loyalists and the rebels. I'm not sure. I don't, it, it does feel a little bit like that, you know. But anyway, so Lonzie Scott's a good guy, capable. He works for the Office of Naval Research. He says
these grants were issued under different guidance, and so yes, you may find lots of things that that have diversity, equity, and inclusion in them over the last 15 years or longer. So for someone to say, oh, well, do they have this stuff in the background? Sure they do. That's what our nation was doing for many, many years. And so if the university is going to be penalized for that at the Florida DOGE level, I think that's a disservice to the university. Now, we will certainly think that, I certainly think we should comply with the new changes that are happening, but to penalize the university for executing under the previous guideline, to me, is a farce and should never happen.
And he's right. I mean, whatever you might think of DEI, whatever you might think of the change in guidance, the idea that you would now punish a university for what it did when the guidance was different. Well, what? Universities have to do so many things on the basis of what they get told by either outside organizations, governing bodies like the Board of Governors, or, you know, granting agencies. And so they basically largely do what's required. But there's also room, and I don't want to be unreasonable about this, there's room for discretion and judgment. And, you know, I think if you want to give the most charitable case to the hostile takeover group, the DeSantis lackeys, appointees, what you want to say is something like this. You had discretion to either really embrace the diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff, or do it just enough to get by, or kind of resist. And the fact that you, or the perception that you didn't resist but leaned in, is what's got them concerned. And I think, as I say, that's the most sort of charitable interpretation of the criticism that folks like Chris Young and Adam Kissel and Zach Smith and are bringing to this conversation. Now, again, Lonzie Scott is going to just kind of explain that, you know, our problems are small compared to some of the research universities around the state that have to deal with many, many, many more times the number of grants, for example, than we do.
If you're thinking of a place like, for instance, the University of Florida, they've got 75 years of research stuff that they got to go back and look at. Even in my department alone, at the Office of Naval Research, we had to go through 4,000 things and go back to tell the government whether or not they had diversity, equity, inclusion, and outreach. Yes, they did. And that has yielded some tremendous progress in the area of war fighting for our nation. So if we continue to go down these, what I consider absolutely crazy path, we're going to lose as a nation, and our state universities are going to be penalized for it.
Okay, so here, Alonzi's not just defending compliance with the reigning winds of the administration, federal or state. He's saying that a lot of the stuff that's been done under the name of DEI has actually produced good results. And by the way, that's true. You know, one of the classic examples of this is in the military, which is kind of his domain, you know, the Office of Naval Research. And if you look at the military, you see a lot of the results of, for example, before it was called DEI, we called it, you know, integration. And racial integration has been one of the great successes of the military over the years, you know, almost a shining beacon of success compared to general society. So it's, again, important to be fair in these conversations that just because something has a whiff of DEI, that doesn't mean that it failed. That doesn't mean that it was terrible. But, you know, you'd have to kind of, and so if you sweep it all away, maybe you do as much harm as you do good, or at least recognize you're going to do some harm. Or in what I think Lonzie Scott is saying is you're going to prevent some good from happening. And that's true. Okay, any public policy is going to carry advantages and disadvantages. And pretending like there are no disadvantages to the new policy that completely reverses a longstanding prior policy, I mean, of course that's going to have some consequences. Chris Young, you know, feeling criticized by Lonzie Scott. This will not be the first time in this meeting that Lonzie Scott raises questions and criticism. There's a lot in this meeting, by the way. But Chris Young feeling a little bit like Lonzie Scott was trying to scold him, and I think he was, and he wasn't wrong for doing so.
All right, thank
Trustee Scott, I appreciate you chiming in, but I think my question, just to be very clear to President Saunders, is are we on the hook to have to pay back any of these monies? And I think
that's not how federal grants work, sir.
Well, I understand. And I think Mr. Lynn has stepped in and explained that.
Yeah, but you asked the question because you didn't know, and everybody had to explain it to you that that's just not how this works. What they do is if you get a grant and then the rules change, you adjust, you adapt, you find a new way to make the grant, and you work together with the granting agency. This happens all the time. It's very normal. Once you establish relationship, things don't typically just blow up because something else changes. But then the question came up again from Adam Kissel, who is the one who got denied by the Senate but is still in the office for the next 45 days or so. The one that I have said I think brings actually a lot of good things to the board, even though everybody else seems to hate him. I think this meeting revealed both the concerns and the virtues. If I want to make the case that he's a good person, I think you can definitely make that case from this meeting. If you want to make the case that he is a troublemaker and a problem, you can also make that case. But again, more on that later. He really lays out this is what we're trying to raise as an issue with particularly Martha Saunders, who clearly they are seeking to get rid of. I mean, there's no question that the DeSantis people are there to try to get rid of Martha Saunders at this point. It's everything but an open admission.
The abstract of the program as provided to MSF said that recognizing that social justice is an often overlooked component of STEM educator identity, scholars will participate in a two-summer social justice citizen science project. The project goals included engaging lay scholars in authentic social justice-based science research. And the project questions, the research questions, asked these two questions: do program components, including the social justice-based citizen science research program and other course components, contribute to STEM majors becoming grade 6 to 12 classroom teachers and high-need LEAs? And another similar research question. And then thanks, I appreciate the provost giving me the last two annual reports on this grant. And in the 2023-2024 annual report, the university wrote, we ascribe to the definition of social justice education as, and then quoting some Carlisle et al. 2006, the conscious and reflexive blend of content and process intended to enhance equity across multiple social identity groups, for example, race, class, gender, sexual orientation, ability, foster critical perspectives and promote social action. But then in the following annual report that just came out in March, under changes in approach, the university wrote, nothing to report. So no change in approach. So social justice was a key project goal, and social justice was embedded into the project's research questions. But I thought I saw this week in a public statement from the university that social justice has not been part of the project in the actual operation of this grant. And yet there was no change in approach. So my question, maybe more for the provost than the president, I'm not sure who knows the answer to this, is, so what was the university saying to the government versus what it's saying this week? I'm trying to reconcile these two different positions.
Now, I wanted you to hear that only because it really gives you a flavor of Adam Kissel, who's a very sharp guy, brings his evidence, does his research more than anybody else that I see on this board. It also is the kind of sharpness of the question, which is, were you lying then or are you lying now? Because if you applied for this grant, the NSF Noyce grant, under the auspices of social justice, and along the way, you say there's been no substantial changes in the way the grant is operating or being used, and you now say that that was only in the boilerplate language at the top of the page, that wasn't in any of the practical details of how the grant operated, that can't all be true. If it was social justice in the beginning and it's not social justice now, then when did the change happen, since along the way you said there was no change? Have you been misrepresenting it all along, or are you misrepresenting it now? Which is logically a fair question. Jeremy Kuhl, who is the provost.
So I can't speak to why that particular question was answered as nothing, but I will say that if you look at the goals stated from 23-24 to 24-25, the goals removed those words social justice. And the team had decided at that point to move with the citizen science projects without the social justice theme. And so That's what the team did. I don't know why it was answered as nothing for that particular question.
So he's saying it was social justice in the beginning, it's not social justice now, and whoever said there's been no changes along the way in the middle, they were wrong, which would answer the question, of course. Then you follow up with, well, who said that and why did they say something that was inaccurate? But meanwhile, Adam Kissel.
So thank you, Provost Kuhl. Did NSF approve these major changes before you made them?
Yes.
Or did you just go ahead with them? So you did, you were able to take social justice out.
They
so
took
is this
them out
another
of the
case?
Sorry? They took them out of the goals, but not the title or the abstract.
I appreciate that.
Okay, so the guidance changed. And we applied to NSF and said, can we change and get rid of the social justice stuff? They said, yes, we changed it. And that's it. That's the end of the story. And now they've canceled the grant without really giving any good explanation.
Did they explain why they canceled the grant?
The only thing they said was that it was canceled due to changing priorities.
Thank you.
Which is weird because we changed our priorities to adapt to what we thought were the changing priorities. But now apparently the changing priorities have changed again. So, all right. Well, I know this is not the most thrilling coverage of the UWF meeting you could expect or of normal for the show. But I just wanted to give you some of the grounding in the facts here, that because this was the story that people were talking about in the PNJ and Channel 3, the NSF noise grant. And this is kind of the background on why this is an issue. The main question is, does UWF have some many massive DEI and or social justice related elements that are now illegal under state law? How pervasive is the problem, and who's to blame for it, and is that person Martha Saunders? That's the question. That's the question, especially that the representatives of the DeSantis administration are in there trying to answer in the affirmative. Yes, there's problems. Yes, they're widespread. And yes, Martha Saunders is to blame for them. That's the case they're trying to make as they are trying to get rid of her. Again, in everything but publicly stated. But you read between the lines of what they brought to this meeting, the ambush case, that's clearly what they're trying to do. So as we talk about this throughout the day, we'll go through some of the examples they brought up and some of the much more interesting audio. But that's kind of the groundwork, okay? That's the background. 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a three-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up.
But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. Woo! And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
Get the Midday News live with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins, 11 to 2, before Guy Benson on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave.
Good morning, 529 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Got to hit that. All right, David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, the Treasury Secretary says the U.S. is getting closer to a trade deal with China. Following weekend talks in Switzerland, Scott Bessent said the two countries have now agreed to pause their reciprocal tariffs for 90 days, with both sides lowering those rates by 115%.
So that pulls it down to 30, right? It was 145 before. I know the one takeaway that keeps making me laugh is the we're going to keep the 10% no matter what, which I always think, well, that was the goal to begin with, was to put a 10% across the board national import tax on everything. And, but, you know, if we jack it up to 50 or 70 or 40 or 145, and then we pull it back to 10, everyone's like, okay, fine. No big deal.
It sounds a whole lot better, huh? The last American hostage being held in Gaza is set to be released by Hamas. In a statement on Sunday, the Hamas said that Israeli-American Eden Alexander is going to be released, and this is part of their goal to help achieve a ceasefire and allow humanitarian aid back into Gaza.
All right, very good, David. Thank you so much for the update. 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, and we have Grand Fiesta Parade is coming up May 30th. Oh, fun times on a Friday night.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Common ground for a trade deal, U.S. trade rep Jameson Greer.
We'll go down to 10% on the United States side, so it goes down 115%. We enter into a 90-day pause period for negotiations, which both the Chinese and the United States are very committed to. And the Chinese on their side also go down 115% to 10%, and they remove the countermeasures that they have in place.
Greer speaking earlier in Switzerland. The president travels to Saudi Arabia today, but not before Hamas says it will free Israeli-American hostage Eden Alexander.
From the Alexander family, which says, quote, today on Mother's Day, we received the greatest gift imaginable, news that our beautiful son, Eden, is returning home after 583 days in captivity in Gaza.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson of Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. President will also stop in Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. It's 66 right now. We've got partly cloudy skies this morning in Pensacola. The third suspect in an April homicide has been arrested. Escambia County deputies say 19-year-old Antonio Larkins was taken into custody last Friday. Investigators believe that he initiated a drug deal, which ended with the murder of 20-year-old Andrew Sanders.
It was a drug deal gone bad, is what we believe it was. So we don't believe that it was a result of a gang initiative.
Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons tells Channel 3 Larkins is believed to be a member of a prevalent gang in the area where the incident happened, but his actions were not believed to be gang-related that day. Sanders' body was found in an abandoned vehicle. He'd been shot in the head, 21-year-old Michael Polnitz and 17-year-old Caleb Banner. Also both been arrested in this case. Well, be careful if you're headed to the bank. Two jugging incidents reported in our area here recently, and that's when a suspect targets somebody they know, has just made a large cash withdrawal, follows them to another location, then breaks into their vehicle to take the cash.
This is something we've had happen twice this week in Pensacola, and my understanding is that it's also happened in surrounding counties recently.
PPD's Mike Wood, and he says if you make a withdrawal at the bank, just pay close attention when you leave. If you believe you're being followed, call 911 for police assistance. Lawmakers back at work in Tallahassee. They're trying to hammer out a budget. Governor Ron DeSantis says the session's already in overtime, and this is the only job lawmakers are required to do.
They don't even have a budget. I mean, literally, the session ended. They don't even have an agreement on what the level should be. They're not even close to any of this stuff.
And there's no word yet on just how long the expanded session could go. Lawmakers have approved a resolution extending that until June 6th. The House could try to extend it further until the end of next month. And if they do, they'd have to pass the budget by June 27th and then vote on it June 30th. State law requires a 72-hour public review period before the final okay. Federal immigration officials say they are aware of a violent incident in Walton County over the weekend. The sheriff's office announced yesterday a man was stabbed by a coworker Saturday night in Santa Rosa Beach. Deputies say two employees were arguing outside of a bar. One of them stabbed the other. The victim is expected to survive. Now, no arrest has been announced, but investigators say the suspect is a Jamaican man that's in the U.S. on a work visa. ICE has been notified of the incident. A third person dead after a crash in Pinellas County involving a University of Miami football player. Police in Largo say 78-year-old Gail Price died last night. She was driving a Kia SUV that collided with a Dodge SUV Saturday afternoon. Two kids in the Kia were killed. They were a 10-year-old boy and a 4-year-old boy. A 58-year-old passenger also suffered serious injuries. University of Miami linebacker Darius Hayes was driving that Dodge. The 20-year-old was taken to the hospital, but is expected to survive. No charges have been filed. It is 534 News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 67 degrees across the area. Partly cloudy skies. Our next news is at 6. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with your money now. The U.S. and China said they have agreed to suspend most tariffs on each other's goods for 90 days, pending further negotiations. Under the agreement, the United States will reduce the tariff on Chinese imports to 30% from its current 145%. Meanwhile, Beijing will cut its retaliatory levies on U.S. goods to 10% from 125%. Texas Attorney General has announced Google will pay $1.4 billion to the state to settle claims the company collected users' data without permission. In 2022, Attorney General Ken Paxton sued Google, saying the search giant collected millions of biometric identifiers through its products and services like Google Photos, Google Assistant, and Nest Hub Max. Walgreens is expanding the number of its retail stores served by its micro-fulfillment centers as it works to turn itself around and prepares to go private. Those centers use robots to fill thousands of prescriptions for patients who take medications to manage or treat diabetes, high blood pressure, and other conditions. Futures are sharply higher. That's your money now.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
Tune in tomorrow at 10 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when guests Shelley Ragsdale, Corey Booth, and JT Young from Florida Power & Light will be on the show talking about everything you need to know that's happening this spring and summer. Learn about spring savings tips, prepping for warm temperatures, and programs to help you save by managing energy consumption and more. Tomorrow at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts. You could travel the world, but nothing comes close to the Golden Coast. Once you party with us, you'll be falling in love. Oh, oh, oh. Girls.
There's folks in the Florida House of Representatives. If you followed how this has gone in the legislative session, when I propose something, the leadership there, they just reflexively oppose it. I mean, that's their view. Now, they didn't run on that. They ran on our agenda, and they seized power because of us. They wouldn't have a supermajority if it wasn't for us. And yet they're there just trying to stop, you know, good progress. And the reason why, I mean, look, I think that they are more The leadership in the House was probably more sympathetic with more of the open borders. But part of it was they didn't want me to get a quote win. That's how these people think. They're not trying to do your business. They're pursuing their own personal agenda. They have vendettas. They have these things. And so that was a really telltale sign.
So the governor says, he tells Channel 3, or sorry, this was actually his speech the other day, where he says that the House hates me. They're just against me because they don't want me to win at anything. They have personal vendettas against me. They're out to get me. They're for open borders, and they have a iron fist around all of their members, coercing, cajoling, and scaring them into doing what's right. And they're, I mean, he used all kinds of colorful language. They're smothering the property tax proposal in the crib. They're kneecapping it. And it's just giving a benefit to those stupid Canadians. He said Canadians like so many times in this press conference. It was so weird. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade, State Representative Alex Andrade. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. So obviously this is, you're good friends with the Speaker of the House, Danny Perez. The Speaker has proposed this idea of I guess it was originally a 0.5%, but now it's kind of moderated to 0.25% across the board sales tax cut. The governor says this will make it impossible to pass a property tax referendum in a year and a half. And all you're trying to do is destroy the budget surplus so that we can't afford to pass a property tax referendum. You guys are poopy faces and hate conservatism. Can you unpack this a little bit for me? Because I don't read you guys that way. But, your chance to respond.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I don't know when precisely our governor became a toddler, but it's making it like just very annoying to listen to him. But the whole concept that we have is, hey, let's cut taxes and let's also cut our budget. Like we're talking about government efficiency across the country. We as the state, let's cut the taxes that we collect as the state and let's also cut our budget. That's what we're doing. We're reducing our budget by nearly $3 billion this year and we're reducing our tax revenue. Likewise, Governor DeSantis really wants to focus on doging everyone but himself. He wants to, doge, in air quotes, local governments and universities, et cetera. And so his big proposal for tax cuts is, property taxes. Well, we don't control property taxes. Those are local governments. And for us to cut property taxes, that has to go on the ballot next November 2026. So what Governor DeSantis is saying is no one needs tax relief in the state of Florida until 2027, and that's assuming it passes in a referendum. He's also now apparently saying that this immediate sales tax cut, a cut of $3 billion to our budget, will make it impossible for us to offset property taxes, meaning let's not cut taxes now. In the off chance, we might possibly could maybe cut property taxes next year. It's the most ridiculous logical fallacy that he's making right now. Why not both? Why not both, Governor? Are you saying the state's $3 billion that we're trying to cut this year is going to somehow not be spent in the interim while we wait to pass this referendum? We're not putting in the savings to offset property taxes. And if you don't couple property tax cuts with actual spending cuts, you're not actually cutting taxes.
It strikes me as a weird approach because it was so much an either or the way he was setting this up, that you would either do the sales tax cut, and he kept, poo-pooing the idea that it was so small, that it was, less than $100 per taxpayer. I think that math is close. I'm not sure it's quite right, but it's not a big amount. I agree with that. But, giving homesteaders back $300 to $1,000, that's not a massive amount here. It's also not a property tax reduction. It's just a payback. But if his argument is we won't have the surplus left to afford a property tax cut then because of this piddly tax cut that you guys are proposing, and yet he's offering an apparently bigger tax cut right now or a rebate check right now, like the whole logic of it doesn't add up. But I just want to press you on one thing because I want to make sure that we're on the same page. You guys aren't saying sales tax cut now and no property tax cut or reevaluation later, because if you push me to pick, I'd rather have property tax reductions than sales tax reductions, for sure. And certainly I'd love to consider eliminating it. You're just saying, let's do this now and we can talk about doing that later, because the later isn't even a guarantee.
Yeah. I mean, it would be hypocritical for us not to cut our own taxes right now if we're advocating for property taxes and forcing local governments to cut their taxes. No, I want to do both. I'm a conservative, Governor DeSantis. I want to cut as much taxes as possible, cut as much spending as possible. Let's start with our own budget first. It's like he wants to cut everybody else's budget but not his own.
Yeah, the idea of imposing a reduction of income on the counties and the cities while not being willing to impose a reduction on the state sales tax income. I mean, yeah.
He's a hypocrite.
Yeah, who are you forcing to pay the price? He takes a very strident tone against local government. They're raising, you know, they're generating more revenue than they've ever generated before. They don't need to have as much revenue. They could go back to, you know, 2019 spending levels. They're wasting your money. They should be the ones to take the cuts. And now I talk to, and you do too. We talk to city council, the mayor. We talk to county commission, the administrators, and all these folks. They are struggling to make ends meet, even with the increased budgets, because of the increased cost of everything from firefighter salaries to construction to paving equipment to sand renourishment. Like, everything costs more. And I feel like the governor somehow feels there's this land of milk and honey flowing out of the county government's largesse, when it's my opinion that the local governments are getting less and less money because of increased homestead exemptions. They're getting imposed upon with mandates that they can't afford, unfunded mandates, and they're consistently being told to do more and more with less and less. But what's your take on this, Alex?
No, I'm sure that there are some local governments that are at the max amount for every, you know, tax they can levy, every fee they can levy. But again, why point outwards when you can point inwards, Governor? Governor DeSantis has increased his budget every single year since he's been in office. And that's since he was in Congress, when he presided in Congress over budget increases and growth in the budget since he's been in public office. There's not been a single year where his budget has actually been lower than it was the year before. So for him to talk about people's budgets growing, it's hypocritical and also ridiculous. He needs to look inward. Local governments around here, we do the rollback rate. You know, there's a campaign to encourage local governments to select the rollback rate this year. That campaign isn't really needed in Northwest Florida, because our local governments generally do opt for the rollback rate.
I thought Santa Rosa maybe did it, but Escambia has not done the rollback rate. For people who don't know, the rollback rate is the idea that as property values increase, your property taxes increase. And what we'll do is we'll take the millage rate and we'll put it back at the level that would produce the same level of income overall, which is a lower or a rollback rate. I don't remember anybody. I thought Santa Rosa did a partial rollback, but not a full one. But I don't think anybody else has done one locally. Am I mistaken about that?
There are local city and counties that I think the city of Milton has done a rollback rate in recent history.
Okay. Maybe they're even like the ones I'm thinking of, a partial. So, okay.
And I think Gulf Breeze has probably done a rollback rate. I'd have to double check year in and year out, but I am sure that rollback rate has been opted for more often than we might think.
Okay. I mean, I may be wrong, but I don't remember it, especially when, you know, big budget, the counties, both counties particularly. But anyway, and you're right. That's an option for them to do some kind of a cut. And again, I know Santa Rosa County has done some cutting in this regard. I do want to switch topics just a little bit, because it's another thing that the governor brought up when he did an interview with Channel 3. I want to play the actual clip for you so that you can hear it from his mouth and then you can respond. This is another kind of criticism of the House particularly.
Why did they last week just do legislation to undo the tort reform that we did? And we actually have auto insurance rates have gone down 5% so far this year. Our property market has stabilized as a result of reforms that were done a couple years ago. These are tough issues, but what they're doing, everyone agrees, will mean more money for trial lawyers and higher costs for consumers. Why would you vote for that in the space of this? And I think that something's wrong with how the House is conducting themselves.
Okay. I wasn't familiar with anything you guys were doing that fit that description, but I figure you would know what he's talking about and you can respond, Alex.
Yeah. If you ever wondered who owns Governor DeSantis, it's the insurance lobby. The only thing we've done this year is work on making sure insurance companies pay out claims fairly, more accurately, and more efficiently. And that's in relation, you know, on top of the fact that insurance companies were discovered to have hidden their assets and lied to the state about their losses a few years ago. There was this bombshell report at the beginning of session about insurance companies hiding their assets, lying about them, and we had a big investigation about that at the beginning of the session.
Is that the whole thing where the parent corporation or the subsidiary is reporting losses by hiding the profits into the other corporation and therefore getting more favorable rates and being able to raise rates when they're actually making? Was that issue?
Yeah, when we have a bill that tries to make it easier for an insured, a consumer, to get paid on their insurance claim or to make it more fair in litigation against an insurance company, that apparently is what DeSantis is talking about. And he, I mean, he's just repeating word for word what the insurance lobbyists are saying. The two things that constituents always talk about with insurance are the price of premiums and their ability to make a claim and get paid out and taken care of by their policy. You can work on both, but apparently DeSantis wants to make it as easy as possible for insurance companies to keep your money and not give it back to you ever.
See, that's what I find frustrating recently, particularly listening to him, when he narrates his version of the immigration bill battle, and I think, I remember all of this, and that's not what I remember. Or when he's narrating his version of the property sales tax bill. Like, that's not what I remember at all. And then so this with the tort reform, it just doesn't.
He'll never tell you he's getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in money from the hemp lobby when he rails against marijuana. Like, these are things that he just doesn't tell you. But people need to look at how much money he's been collecting from special interests like insurance companies and hemp and down the line, because he is selling himself out on his way out the door. And he's making it seem as if, like, he's the only person fighting for folks. It's ridiculous.
Alex, one last thing I want to get in with you before we let you go is, and I don't know if you've heard me talking about this or not, but there was this really weird crash. And I know I'm a little bit fixated on this, but when I find things that make no sense, I will kind of can't get tunnel vision on it. It's a law that says that if you're on a two-lane highway with a dotted, dashed line where you can, pass, and I'm making a left turn, and somebody gets annoyed with me or gets irritated or doesn't want to wait, and they pass me, and then we collide because they're passing when I'm trying to turn. In many situations, it's my fault. And I had somebody text in and say, my very first accident back in the 80s was I was on Via de Luna turning into our condo in my grandparents' car. Somebody didn't want to wait. They passed around me. They hit me, and I got the ticket for it. That strikes me as a crazy law that, A, most people do not know is the law in Florida, and, B, could probably use a little tweaking. Any thoughts or any...
Yeah, someone should really do something about that, Andrew.
I wish I knew a legislator who had it.
Yeah, someone should really get right on that.
All right.
No, it's a good... No, point well taken. I understand. Thanks for bringing it to me. I agree with you. So going into next session, starting this November, let me see about some language.
Okay. I mean, and it maybe there's some justification for it that I'm not seeing. Maybe there's some way to write it where there's like a threshold of right-of-way or something, because I can get there circumstances where it might make sense. But generally speaking, I was like, oh, my God, some jerk wagon can decide that he wants to not wait for me, pass me on the left, and I'm to blame when he hits me in the side. Like, that cannot be right. Anyway,
well, it's a weird incentive. You don't want anybody in that left lane when someone's turning,
right?
Like, you don't want anyone oncoming or passing in that left lane when someone's turning. So why incentivize that?
Yeah, exactly right. Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. Alex, as always, thank you for the time, and we'll look forward to talking again next week.
Thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. By the way, I think after we had done that interview, I'd gotten some follow-up information, and Santa Rosa County has done some either minor or significant rollback rates. I don't think Escambia County has done rollback, and I don't remember them ever doing it, but anyway, we're kind of, debating back and forth on whether that had happened. I do not think that happened in Escambia County. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3, I'm Andrew McKay.
Gathering at Pensacola Beach is a wonderful family experience. If you've thought about having a family celebration or an amazing beach wedding, there is a very special home now available, Casa de Luna. Casa de Luna is spacious with room for large families. It has 9 large bedrooms and 8 bathrooms. Casa de Luna is a large private home with a refreshing pool and water views.
The pool has a new 4,000 BTU gas heater. Casa de Luna is unique in that the main living area is directly on the ground level. It's very convenient. Bedrooms are both on the ground level and upstairs. One bathroom is handicap friendly, and another has a jacuzzi tub. There is a large gaming porch with a pool table, hockey, ping pong, and Xbox One. Bicycles are provided. Bring your family to Casa de Luna on Pensacola Beach.
For information, call Casa de Luna at 850-433-4855. That's 850-433-4855.
You've built up the equity in your home. Now, a home equity line of credit from PinAir Credit Union can help you put it to great use. So build something incredible, like a backyard oasis or new walk-in shower. Invest in something special, like education or your business. Or just replace your roof. Boring, but important. Whatever you need, a home equity line of credit from PinAir is ready and waiting. And since there's no annual fee and no closing costs, a PinAir home equity line is always a perfect fit. Get started at PinAir.org/HELOC. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing lender.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
When breaking news hits, we're there to cover it. Fox News, WEAR-TV, News Radio team on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You really want to know how to stay alive? You get people to like you.
I mean, I just listen to Eddie play all day. That's fine with me. Eddie on the strings and Alex on the drums. 5:56 on News Radio 92.3. There you go. And some people are going to be angry because that's Sammy on the vocals. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. President Trump will be in the Middle East this week. The White House says he's going to reaffirm his commitment for a free and prosperous region. He's due to visit Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates.
To pick up that new 747?
Maybe.
Here's your $400 million plane, sir. Totally legal. No questions asked. There's lots of questions asked. But the argument is, it's not illegal because it's not going in exchange for anything, you know? And because it's going to go to the presidential library eventually, it's not going to go to Trump himself. I mean, I get Trump's argument, like, we're saving several hundred million dollars. But a foreign country's giving you a plane.
Definitely
that
gray
can't
area
be.
Yeah.
That's not normal. Anyway, go ahead, sir.
Well, more than two dozen U.S. cities are reportedly slowly sinking due to groundwater extraction.
It's all the Marines.
That is the FIA.
It's like what happened to Guam.
I thought the island tipped over.
Exactly. Yeah. This is the early phases of where is it?
It says two dozen U.S. cities.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Too many Marines, obviously.
Yeah.
Just ask.
It doesn't say which cities. It just says two dozen cities.
Ask Hank Johnson.
They're just
District
all
7 in Georgia.
Over.
He knows.
Every last one of them.
Sorry.
Yeah, I lost
sure
where
I'm
at.
I'm sure there are people like, what is he even talking about? No time to play it. Go on.
Oh, I think you'll find time
find
for
a
Hank
way.
Johnson. Let's see. Where was I at? It was a study from Virginia Tech published in the journal Nature Cities. The study finds Houston is the fastest sinking city, with some areas dropping 20 millimeters per year.
So Houston is the best at sinking.
The best at sinking.
Okay.
It's good to be number one.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to be tops at something. Oh, come on. I have to be able to find this clip real fast. Because for the, again, the people who do not know, it's so good. And I'm not going to, I'm too slow on my searching this morning.
While you're in that process.
Okay, go on. Yes, please.
The jockey who rode Sovereignty to a win at the Kentucky Derby has been suspended. Junior Alvarado was suspended for 2 days and fined $62,000 by the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority over the weekend. Authorities say Alvarado struck the horse too many times during the race.
Yeah, I guess there's some, I mean, I wasn't following the story all that closely, but I guess there's a limit. Okay, Hank Johnson talking to the Admiral about the danger to Guam.
Yeah, my fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
We don't anticipate that. The
best straight-faced answer of all time is Admiral Robert Willard telling Hank Johnson that moving Marines to Guam isn't going to risk tipping the island over.